The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And we're back in effect. Analyze This. What's this? A year and... No, actually, it's you know, it's a year and a day from when we started, but it's actually a full year, and this is day two of the second year, because yesterday was the first day of year number two. Good morning, Madam President. Glad to have you in the house, live and direct.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Of course.
Today's a good day because I'm actually talking with you in person.
In person, man. So I'm good with that.
That's absolutely awesome.
Yeah. And we got your legs crossed, all that professional looking, all that stuff. Looking good, by the way. And, of course, Director... Ian Turnbull for the Division of Festivals and Department of Tourism, and the Commissioner himself, Joe Bashelty. Good morning once again, gentlemen.
Good morning.
So we'll wrap up the conversation. I asked this question because I'm in the elevator in Marriott Frenchman's Reef 2017 before, you know, she came and did what she did. And so I like to talk to people, and I heard the accent. I said, because they saw me all dressed up, you know, guy in the suit and all that stuff, and we were teasing each other, and they were, you know, just how I would want to dress, which is a T-shirt and the flops and short pants. So I said, somebody's overdressed, and I told them, started to laugh. So we started talking. Of course, I heard the accent. They were from Arizona, I believe it was. So this is August. So I was like, you know, you're in the Virgin Islands here? And they said, yeah, where we are, where we live. There is no breeze, and it's humid, and it's hot. So obviously, they were pretty much saying that the Virgin Islands was a marketplace in August, and typically July and August is when we struggle, because cruise ships are working their way up in the Alaska area and in the northern Atlantic and northern Pacific. So the question is, come summertime, you know, we're attractive as it is, Commish. Do we have any marketing in place for the Texases, the Arkansas, Louisianas? Those southern tier states, where cactus is big, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Arizona, and people looking to come to the tropics to get some breeze to go along with that heat.
Yes, thank you for that question. Yes, we actually have highlighted that Southwest market as a major area of growth for us. We actually have some deliverables coming this summer. We were fortunate enough to work with American Airlines over the last couple of years to deliver one flight from Dallas, which was a Saturday at American Airlines. This past season, within the pandemic, we moved that from a Saturday flight to a daily flight. Because of the demand from Texas to the U.S. Virgin Islands, that flight comes back in June twice. So two daily nonstops from Dallas-Fort Worth into St. Thomas. That's very, very big for us because it opens the West Coast. It opens that Southwest market for the summer months. So that's two direct flights coming in. From Dallas to St. Thomas, and we have a direct flight coming in 7 days a week from Houston and beginning in June. Right now it's 2 days a week from Houston on United into St. Thomas direct. Again, based upon what you just said, Senator, with regards to very, very hot in Texas, and people actually want to leave Texas and go to someplace else during the summer. So we will have three direct flights out of Texas into the U.S. Virgin Islands. We're working very closely with American, actually, to bring a flight from Dallas into St. Croix. Hopefully, the winter season, definitely, as long as we keep doing what we say we're doing and they're seeing the results from us, potentially in 22, because right now we've been going through the analytics, Antenna, do you like that? Which shows that there's a tremendous demand from Texas into St. Croix as well as into St. Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
So we are trying to work with them now to promote both districts in the area. So we actually had three different in-market events in Texas over the last 6 weeks. Again, part of the promotional plan. So we agree 100%. We'd be happy to have these direct flights coming in from Texas. And the other part it does is it opens the West Coast to the U.S. Virgin Islands, because now you could leave from L.A., San Diego, San Francisco, Seattle, and come into Dallas and catch that flight and make it into the USVI in the same day, which is very big for us as well.
Without a doubt, now I can put on my chairman of the whole hat here and recognize Senator Donna Fair Gregory, to ask a question to you, Commissioner Turnbull. Director Turnbull and Commissioner Buschelte, if you have a question.
What my primary concern is, Commissioner, and that is, so you know that we've really seen a boost in our marine industry, particularly in the St. Thomas district and St. Thomas St. John district. Of course, you're also seeing it in St. Croix as well. And of course, we know particularly in St. Thomas, St. John, that a lot of the marine market, you know, would fly into St. Thomas and they would go over to the BVI. And we see that the BVI is now opening back. There's a big consideration around them reopening. So, you know, my primary concern, and you and I discussed this before, you know, what is it that we're doing in the Virgin Islands, the U.S. Virgin Islands, to make sure that we are able to hold on to that market. We see a lot of yachts, et cetera, in our harbors. So it is important that we figure out how we hold on to that market. So I want to hear from you as to, you know, what is it that we're doing to ensure that once the other Caribbean islands, because I only mentioned the BVI, but it's also the other Caribbean islands that has been basically shut down as a result of the COVID-19 situation. So what are we doing to make sure that we continue to hold on to that market? I know years ago in the 80s, early 90s, you know, we had that market and we lost it for a myriad of reasons. I think one of them was around the six-pack rule, et cetera. But, you know, we have to figure out how to hold on to that market. I think it's so important for us to really drill down on how we give it serious consideration. So what are you doing? What is your what is you and your team doing to ensure that we are able to keep that niche?
Yeah, thank you for your question, Senator President Fred Gregory. We are actually pushing very, very aggressively in those circles, in the marine circles. We have registered for a series of trade shows that will be in person from Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, into Rhode Island. Again, to make it our presence at the U.S. Virgin Islands is here and here to be and here to stay. And part of that, from a marketing standpoint, is you have to be visible. So we have a team that's set up to attend all of these conferences, have a presence. We're working very closely with the VI Charter Association that registers the majority of these charter boats that stay in the territory and are registered in the U.S. Virgin Islands. We work very closely on the yacht side, so we're also visible in that space. But the second part of the question, and I think is a very important one that we cannot overlook, is that the territory has to increase its investment in infrastructure in that space. So a big step was taken. Senator President, I think you hosted or held a hearing with the 100 moorings that are to be placed around the territory. That's a major step in the right direction, because we have to have the necessary infrastructure for these influx of vessels to safely move around and protect the environment at the same time. So moorings is a big step in that. And I think we have to make sure that we have the necessary infrastructure setups across the island. One of the big changes we've seen in the overnight success and the marine success during the COVID period here in the territory is you have a lot more people on the water and around the island all day. You know, we have been predominantly a cruise ship destination, so that's 5 or 6 hours and everybody gone. Now what we're seeing is that we have people out for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Mm-hmm. We have people on the water from 8 o'clock in the morning. So that brings another level of trash cleanup. All of these things are infrastructure needs that we have to invest in. And then lastly, if we are going to have a major role in the marine industry, we have to get more investment in enforcement on the water. That means more boats, more marine enforcement officers, because we can't expect for everybody to self have the honor system and come in and say, hey, I report and I just came into territory. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure we have enforcement officers out there, not only to make sure that they're keeping our environment clean and safe, but we also collecting our fair share of dollars for people coming in and enjoying us in the territory. So it's a three-step process, but from a marketing of the territory standpoint, the Department of Tourism is out in front and aggressively pushing that. And the industry will see us aggressively across the space as at shows, as well as we are heavily promoting in that industry space, print magazines and digital space.
So I want to take it a step further, if the host would allow me.
No, go right ahead.
So we talked about just the marine side and, you know, what we need to do. But I really think that we also have a perfect opportunity to begin to have talks with particularly those individuals who are coming in on these yachts, et cetera, as it relates to our economic development component. I don't know. I know that I've talked about it, but I'm not sure where we are with aligning this our ability or opportunities. I think where we see challenges, of course, there are opportunities. And what I think that what we should be doing now, if it's not already happening, is we should be, you should be partnering with EDA and the Virgin Islands Port Authority, et cetera. When those jets come in, we should be giving them an EDA package. We should be also looking for those yachts, giving them the packages from EDA so they could begin to have conversation as to whether or not they could open home offices here in the Virgin Islands. I think we have to take it a step further. So it's not only about a tourism component. I think that we could actually step it up a notch with actually having those conversations with those individuals who are able to or willing, we have to sell it, of course, to bring their home offices here so we could improve and upgrade our EDA program here in the Virgin Islands. We know that we lost a lot of our EDA participants, but I think we have a unique opportunity to bring some of those participants back to the Virgin Islands because of, you know, COVID-19.
I agree 100%. And we actually have been having conversations with CEO Biggs and his team about collaborative marketing from the tourism side and the economic development side moving forward. We did do that before the pandemic. And I think the other thing that may be important for us to begin to consider is, do we need to introduce a marine incentive type of opportunity for these marine travelers that come in and these charter boats or the big super yachts, similar to what we have with the Hotel Act and the Stars Act for film and music, as opportunities to, at a minimum, have these people that come, whether it's the owners of the vessels or people who actually sail on them, to learn more about the opportunities here in the USVI. And at a minimum, what the Hotel Act and the Stars Act have done, at least in my short time here in tourism, is it allows for a conversation to be had about what the benefits are to do business in the territory.
Absolutely.
So I agree with you 100%, Senate President.
Well, we need to ramp that up. I think it doesn't require a lot of lifting, and it's something that we need to ramp up. We don't need to have a lost opportunities. We really need to get on board with that sooner than later.
Agreed. I'll reach out to CEO Biggs again.
Most definitely. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Anything you want to say?
You.
Finally, Mr. Turnbull, with respect to encouraging the public to tune in.
Yeah, I just want to encourage everybody to tune in. If you're in St. Croix, St. John, or St. Thomas, and you have been vaccinated, of course, you can call MTOC and get your tickets. The number to call is 340-690-7772. We definitely want individuals. We have some tickets left, but again, we want to give people an experience, but also showcase to the world that the Virgin Islands is top of mind. And we definitely,
and
when the place open up, we want people to come back and join us.
And the details for the event?
Yes, details. April 30th, show starts at 7 p.m. The live stream will be available on the USVI Festival's Facebook page, the website, which is www.usvifestivals.vi. Or you can go on our YouTube page, which is USVI Festivals. It's also going to be aired on One Caribbean, CBS USVI, ABC USVI. Again, we encourage everybody to tune in. It'll be from 7 p.m. on Friday evening. If you can't see it live at the event, then, you know, you can join any one of the local bars. And tell them to turn it on, you know, have a watch party at one of the local bars. Big shout out to our sponsors, of course, West Indies and Bellows Coors Light, Hennessy, VI Lottery, First Bank, the Department of Health, VIPD, everybody who's made this happen, and we hope to have more of these events in the future.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Continued success, Commissioner Bashalti and Director Turnbull from the Department of Tourism.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Have a good one. Okay, Senator President.
You got it. Good. You know, it's been a great week, and it's a great show. You know, I got a co-host now. The Senate President came in, took things over, started asking questions, putting the Commissioner of Tourism on the spot, and he kind of held his own. I like that. We're good. We're good. We'll take a break. Come back. We'll delve into 100 days of Senate presidency for Senator Donna Fred Gregory. The notorious DFG is in the house. We'll be back right after this.
Be eligible for credit on your Via mobile, internet, or landline service through the Lifeline program. Lifeline is a federal program for qualifying low-income customers that lowers the monthly cost of important communication services. If you receive Medicaid, SNAP, housing assistance, or other government aid, a Lifeline credit may be available to you.
Contact Via at 340-777-8492 or visit the website via.vi/lifeline to see if you qualify.
Yes, I'm so glad to be talking to you.
What will you hear on the next On Point?
I have never been so impressed with your host. I just thought that was the best interview and the most learning challenge I've heard in a long time.
Explore the world we're living in now together. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
On Point, weekdays at 10 a.m.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with NPR's Morning Edition, which reminds you of the power of one human voice. You turn on the radio some morning, or your device, and you're listening to Morning Edition, and you hear one person telling a story from the other side of the world or from a neighborhood near you, and that voice brings you understanding of the news. Listen to Morning Edition every day.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m.
Yeah. And we're back in effect, and we had the legislative branch and the executive branch engaging in a nice dialogue there. Of course, you know, tourism is the primary goose laying the golden egg here in the territory, and right now we're benefiting from it. So, you know, sometimes, you know, how does the phrase go? For every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction, right? Senator President Fred Gregory. The neighboring islands not having American tourists come into those islands, those foreign, I guess that's an appropriate terminology because they're not American jurisdictions. And people need to get an outlet. They need places to go. And the reality is, in COVID-19, the Virgin Islands has benefited from that.
Absolutely. In a big way.
And we saw it last year when we saw the yachts piling up. Megan's Bay, St. Thomas Harbor, Christiansted Harbor, Frederickstead Harbor. I'm sure there are other marinas over there on the eastern side, right? Working their way around Red Hook and all that stuff, right? Do you see that being the deal for a while?
It's up to us. I think it's really up to us. And that's why I kind of queried the commissioner, because we've discussed it before, but it's up to us as to how we deal with it. I think we need to put some planning and strategies in place to ensure that we are able to keep the market, you know, things to do. You know, like I said earlier, let's talk with those individuals who have huge businesses, etc. These business individuals that to figure out, you know, whether or not they would be willing to open home offices in the Virgin Islands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are the things that we have to do. Of course, we also have some things to do outside of that. We have to address our healthcare system. We have to address our infrastructure. So that's some things that we have to do, but we have to work on it. It has to be a collective approach, and we can't just talk about, yeah, we're doing great right now. How do we keep it? Because you know, we've seen over the years how it has slipped away from us.
But you're talking like Johnny McCleverty. I'm sure you know that name. That's a very powerful name in the Virgin Islands. He told me, he said, Neville, in my very first term, I was chairing economic development. And I forget what the other part, the one where they had me going to the banquet and carrying out the garbage. What's the other one that'll be on the economic development on one hand?
Waste management?
No, the other one, I had another name for it. I don't know, with all the zonings and all that stuff. I can't all know.
CZM?
Yeah, they had environmental protection. Environmental protection, right? They had me doing both, right? It kind of set me up, you know, because I had done well in the previous election. But I was glad for the experience. But Mike Cleverty said this, Neville, your today's cruise ship passenger is your next overnight visitor, right? That's pretty much what you're saying in terms of business. They might be coming here, but then you want them to stay, right?
Yes, that's a big business issue. You know, we have a viable EDA program, and we need to figure out how to really ramp up that program. And I think that we have a unique opportunity to do that.
But with the tax exemptions, though, the program's supposed to sell itself a little bit. But I think you're articulating we need to be aggressive on our own. We just can't wave the 90 and 100% tax exemptions in front of people's face. They got to know that when they come here, the amenities that they're looking for.
Absolutely. That they want families.
That's right. That's good. Absolutely. That's good.
But a lot of times people come here and they don't really know what we're offering or what we have to offer. So it's our responsibility to also share that information. And that's why I'm so big on EDA and the tourism department on them working together, because you know, those things have to align. You know, every time I hear a conversation, it just becomes a little frustrating, and I'm trying to be nice about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about it. That is nothing to talk about. We are at the place where you put your brochure, your packages together. You hire someone to push that information out. When I say push it out, to get it to the folks on the marine side. You have the jet center. You get it to those individuals as they land.
Yeah,
that is not rocket science.
Well, I'm thinking, right, eventually the neighboring islands are going to reopen.
Absolutely.
And what we should be doing is the boaters, right? And we touched on the 100 moorings, right?
We have more.
It's gonna be more.
I had conversations with two individuals who have one coming in the Red Hook area,
yeah,
and they're looking to make some changes on the Water Island. You remember that hotel development over there?
So there's a lot of marine initiatives coming about. We definitely want that project to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That project means well for everybody, including St. Croix.
Oh yes,
right.
Yes.
No. But check this out. Here's what I'm saying. We need to tell the boaters today. When the other islands reopen, we want you to set up your home base in the Virgin Islands, so that you have some place that you know that you could count on while you decide, okay, I'm coming down from, let's say some people coming from Rhode Island, they work their way to Florida, then they come to the Caribbean, they're going to spend, 3-4 months. You need a home base. We want to see what we could do that the Virgin Islands could be that home base. So when you're heading down to St. Lucia or Guadeloupe or whatever, for however long, on your way back up, you're coming in. You check what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I mean, that to me, that's the way we need to be thinking. I mean, this thing about, okay, well, you know something, we're just glad that you're coming in now. No. This thing about, we ain't glad you coming now. You came here because you had to. You know what I'm saying? We need to stop being.
That's our reality.
Being real about what benefits we offered for you in a time of need, because you had nowhere else to go.
Right.
And you know, we're not really flaunting it in your face, but these are the realities that we're dealing with. And it takes two hands to watch each other. No, I've been doing it, Matt. Madam President, 21 days in January, including the 11th, right? 28 days in February. That's 49. 31 days in March gets us to 80. And now today is the 28th. Of April, so you just passed 100 days last week. That would be last week, Tuesday, somewhere around there, right? The 20th. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know
you wish I'd been in there so we could have had fun breaking.
Oh, man, I do.
What's it been? You know, you've been Senate President for 100 days, a little bit over 100 days in a week. What's up, man? How's it been?
It's been quite an experience. Mm-hmm.
Freshman senator to Senate president. That's.
I'm not a freshman senator.
I'm no longer a neophyte.
No.
I'm talking about the transition. You went from freshman senator to Senate president. That really does. It doesn't happen like that. Typically, it's maybe two terms at a minimum, three. You did it with one foundational term. What was that like?
Well, so this is what I'm going to start up by saying. I'm going to say I want to thank my colleagues for recognizing my ability to lead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a freshman senator, I came into the legislature about the business. I stayed focused on the agenda. You know, you serve, so you would understand that, you know, you come into the legislature, you could really get distracted.
Oh, yes.
There are a lot of things that can distract you. The process, there are things that can discourage you, the process,
mm-hmm.
how you get to move your bills through the whole, you know, the whole legislature from sending in your draft to legal counsel to getting it heard on the Senate floor to your colleagues saying, we're not going to support that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I've worked very hard to ensure that, you know, if I see that there's some dissension around the work that I'm doing, that I meet with those individuals who have issues and concerns so we could come to a happy medium. You know, sometimes you think that you have great legislation, but in fact, you're looking at it only through your lens.
Mm-hmm.
And it is important to engage your colleagues so you could see what their lens, what they're seeing through their lens, and you kind of collaborate. So you don't always agree, you know, but I think what's important is that you're transparent and you put the information out there and you're able to share information and work along with them. Although sometimes you go in a different direction, you know, it's important that they know that you respect their position, you respect their opinion, although you are still going down the road on your path. So I would say that moving from a freshman senator, as you, I've never really looked at it like that, honestly.
No, well, you've had experience in the legislature, so
yes, I have.
So you didn't come in on cold turkey. You know the process, and you were a commissioner. So the logical question is, what's it like having served in a cabinet capacity? Right,
mm-hmm.
You were commissioner of education. What, 2014, 15, or 2000?
Yeah, you remember?
2000? No, it would be 2012 to 14.
Around there,
right? Mm-hmm. Or January 15, whatever that is. To be in less than 7%.
Less than 7%
of the membership. Yeah, because one out of 15 is, you know.
I quickly learned that. So I'm no longer the manager.
Yeah.
I'm no longer the person that says, you know, this is how we're gonna do it. You know, you have to, like I said earlier, you have to collaborate and work with your colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an institution where you have someone saying, this is how we're going to do it. This is how you're going to do it this way. Or we're going to get up tomorrow and we're going to have this meeting or that meeting that I have to attend. So you have to also have to have some level of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you are not accustomed to not being in an environment where you're managed, if you will, you could kind of fall off the wagon, you know, because... You know, the only time that you're truly held accountable is during the election period.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
That can really impact you overall as a senator. So you have to exercise a lot of discipline and be very serious about your business and show up.
You use the term distract. Did COVID-19 actually refocus you and members of the 33rd individually and collectively? Because at that particular point, the terrain completely changed?
I think it refocused us. What many of us did is we, during the whole period last year,
mm-hmm.
we, behind the scenes, we continued to work and collaborate and build legislation. So it kind of helped us to, and that's a good segue to what I wanted to share with you today.
Yeah,
what you know, but...
That's why you're here.
Okay, good. But it helped us to refocus. So you did ask me about, you know, moving from Senate President, from a freshman senator to Senate President. Of course, I kind of shared with you how, you know, I never really looked at it
mm-hmm.
in that light. But,
and there's one thing I want to say before you go where you're going. You, Senate President is a dual role. You're not just a senator. You have an administrative responsibility of the highest level.
Absolutely.
In addition to providing that legislative representation for what you were elected for.
Yes.
So, you know, in that vein.
Right. Well, yes. So, you know, moving from that, from being a freshman senator to being a Senate President, it wasn't a difficult transition for me because, like I said to you, I, you know, figured out how to maneuver the waters in the Senate very early on in my first year as a senator. But moving to Senate President, you're talking about the administrative component. You know, I look at that a little differently. and I know that you as well serve as Senate President. Mm-hmm. So I look at that a little differently. So I know that we have an executive director, and I think it's important that the executive director understands the importance of managing the day-to-day operations of the legislature and hold that the executive director accountable. Of course, there are going to be time to time when you really have to step in as the Senate President, because at the end of the day,
the buck
stops with the Senate President.
That's right.
So,
you're a branch leader.
Well, yes, but one of the things that I do, so I don't make independent decisions as a Senate President. I collaborate.
You shouldn't.
You should not. And it's, for anybody out there that's hearing me who's interested in ever serving as a senator or moving on to becoming Senate President, you have to work with your colleagues, those of your colleagues that are in the majority, to ensure that, the direction that you're moving in, that they are, in fact, in support of it.
Well,
and if they're not, you have to figure out how to get them on your side. You have to.
Yeah,
Otherwise, things will go south really fast.
In order to be, this is what I said on Touring Indy 2015. In order to be Senate President, you have to survive an election and a selection.
Yes.
Right? Elected by the people, then you're selected by your colleagues, mm-hmm. right, to lead. So, but you had administrative responsibilities before, so that part of it I'm not too concerned about, because you know what it's like to run a branch of government. As a matter of fact, the education department is what, a quasi government within the government for
Literally.
The most part.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And the budget for the legislature pales in comparison to what you were managing. And you actually came from the finance part of Department of Education to that point. So from a management standpoint, I'm not concerned about. What I am concerned about is that we are going through a significant time here in our existence with the vaccine, right? And they're going to shift nationally now, right? Just to show you put things in proper context. Vaccine doses administered per month. This is nationally. 3.6 million in December. 29.1 million in January. 44.2 million in February. 76.7 million in March. With a few days to go in April, we're at 78.8 million. So the transition is happening in real time.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing is happening here locally. What do we do to encourage our residents who might be reluctant? And I have no problem with that, because when you're talking about people's life, they make the calls for their own life. But if we really want to get to the new normal, there has to be some give and take. How do we go about encouraging your constituents?
My colleagues?
And colleagues. Everybody.
Yeah, well, I think the Department of Health has been doing a good job of putting the information out there. But I also believe it's the responsibility of leaders who, believe in the science to have those conversations and have those talks with their constituents about, why we should become vaccinated. The information.
Talk about what the mandate for the senators for vaccination back in January.
The mandate for the senators.
Yeah, they had all get vaccinated. Back
it wasn't in, a mandate. It wasn't a mandate. I mean, we were in line early.
It's an individual mandate.
But I believe that if we are going to truly serve the people of the Virgin Islands, and one of our major responsibilities is oversight,
mm-hmm.
and in our oversight responsibility, we have hearings,
mm-hmm.
and we have to act responsibly. So in order to have those hearings, right now what we're doing is we are still having our hearings via virtually.
Mm-hmm.
And I want us to get back to in-person hearings.
Yeah, man. It's a whole different game.
You find a lot of times that the information gets lost, what the senators are trying to speak about. And of course, on the other side as well. So it's my responsibility. And I try to talk to my colleagues about it all the time. Those who are, not so comfortable with becoming vaccinated, the importance of the legislature reopening, because leadership says that if you're going to lead, you have to lead by example.
Man, that's what people are watching now.
So they expect that. Okay, so if the legislature is back in, because now we have a conversation about, well, some schools are back in person.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have those expectations of our constituents, then we should have them for ourselves. And in order for us to truly get back into effective meetings, We need to become vaccinated.
Yeah, man.
Our people need to be vaccinated. Our commissioners, our senators. We and you know, but you of course everybody has a choice. So you have to be mindful of that as well.
I gave my second dose. In an hour.
Oh well, I was vaccinated in my last dose was January 26th.
Yeah, man. So I gave my second dose in an hour. So I'm looking for when we come back, because this isn't the full conversation you and I are gonna have at some point today. This is like a precursor, and we'll set up the real deal for sometime in the near future. We'll be back right after this with the Senate President.
Bank of St. Croix, we provide the ability to bank anytime that fits your schedule. With in-person, online, and mobile app banking, you have access to your personal or business accounts anytime. Bank of St. Croix has two locations, one in Gallows Bay at 340-773-8500 and one in Peters Rest at 340-713-8500. Bank of St. Croix, bankofstcroix.com.
As he approaches 100 days in office, President Biden will deliver his first speech before a joint session of Congress.
Madam Speaker, the President of the United States.
It comes amid challenges, the pandemic, an economy still in recovery, civil unrest, and international tensions. Join us Wednesday evening for live special coverage of President Biden's address to Congress and the nation from NPR News.
9 p.m. Wednesday on WTJX FM 93.1.
It's okay to laugh, even in the toughest times. Perhaps no one knows that better than veteran satirist Samantha Bee.
I think I watched a zombie movie and there were just like crowds of people in a stadium and I was like, look at all the people fleeing, flesh-eating zombies coming together as a crowd.
That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
On Point weekdays at 10 a.m.
And we're back here, and unfortunately, we have an abbreviated appearance from the Senate President because you know she's busy, you know, got things to do, people to see, and all that stuff. Let's talk quickly, Madam President, because we only got for like 5 or 6 more minutes. In your estimation, what is our biggest need in the Virgin Islands? You are St. Thomas, St. John elected senator, but as it stands right now, you are a branch leader, so you are a territorial senator right now. And I know about making that transformation as well, being a Senate President. What is the Virgin Islands' biggest need in the opinion of Senator Donna Fred Gregory?
Well, it can't be one thing. Let's be clear on that. It cannot be one thing.
You got the mic.
As the majority in the 34th legislature, is we recognize what our needs were.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, we did something that was, you know, very different to what other legislatures have done. We formed 3 subcommittees. I don't know if you're aware of them. Subcommittee on Energy and Infrastructure Development. That's a big need.
That was good.
And then Health and Public Safety, GRS and Economic Development. We formed those 3 subcommittees. And if you ask me, those are the 3 biggest needs and the things that we really need to focus on here.
So you're saying that in the 34th legislature, those areas will get specific attention via the subcommittees?
Absolutely, and they've already started.
Okay.
We know that in the 33rd legislature, we've worked really hard to address some of the issues that we have with WAPA. And, of course, mm-hmm. those bills were vetoed. We are coming again.
We're coming again.
Formed the subcommittee. We allowed the subcommittee to do the work. And the one that particular energy and infrastructure, that subcommittee is chaired by Senator Janelle Saro.
Noel Hodge, the interim director, he made an appearance here a couple Thursdays back. I like that dude.
Yeah, he's trying. This is what I'm going to tell you, though. And I'm going to give that pitch right now.
Yeah.
I am going to say this. Irregardless of who is hired at the Water and Power Authority, that individual needs assistance.
Without a doubt.
We need to hire, and I've moved the turnaround company.
Well, the governor talked about going the team route and not just a CEO route.
Well, whichever way he want to handle it. Yeah. But I'm saying a turnaround company needs to evaluate. Absolutely.
It's for the authority to handle it. I know the governor has influence, but it's really for the authority to make decision board, the governing board that they, you know, so big on being. They need to determine, you know, we need some structural change in the water
absolutely.
Power authority.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it needs a deep dive, a true look-see. Because in as much as we've heard all the discussions and the legislature has, you know, brought WAPA before the various committees on many occasions, if any of us were to say we truly know what's going on, we'll be being very dishonest. It's time that we get the information and begin to move that institution or the authority forward. So I find that to be a very important thing.
Good. Another subcommittee, we touched on energy. Another subcommittee is the gorilla. He's sitting over there. We just can't see him with his legs crossed. The GRS.
GRS. Yeah.
Talk about that.
So we've been working behind the scenes. We've been working. I saw that just recently the chair Ms. Abori, Nelambori, mm-hmm. and that committee is chaired by Senator Vele, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The chair of
the energy subcommittee is chaired by Senator Saro.
Yes, and the health and public safety is chaired by Senator Novell Francis.
Senator Francis, okay.
Yeah, but let's just touch very quickly on what's happening with us behind the scenes as it relates to GRS.
Mm-hmm.
And just not to give out too much information because we're trying to put in the ingredients before we bake the cake,
mm-hmm.
you know. So we've been working with the members of the government employees retirement system to figure out how we could, you know, starve off some of the situation that we're having right now. And you know, I just want to say to the retirees that, you know, they need to ease down their anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
They need to ease their anxiety down.
Justifiable, but we're asking them to ease it down.
Yes, justifiable, yeah. But we're asking them to ease it down, mm-hmm. because we are really not ignoring this. We are trying our best behind the scenes to pull some stuff together. And then we're going to emerge, but at the appropriate time. So it's not that nothing is going on behind the scenes.
We had a conversation last night about this. So here's the options, because we asked, so what's the dollar options? And here's what was said to us. I'm not going to call any names. $300 million a year for 20 years or $3 billion in lump sum, right? When you look at those two, so the $300 million for 20 years, that's $6 billion over 20 years or $3 billion one time. that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I think we could do. I don't know that we are. We have to look. I mean, anybody
I'm just talking
having...
about that. But when we're talking about from a need perspective, that's a significant amount of money. That tells the public the levels of the unfunded liability.
Absolutely. However, we know that we are a community of how many people? About 110, 100,000.
Yeah, because we don't really, there's a percentage that we keep ignoring that's not included in the count. So I believe our number is really like 105 to 110,000.
Yes,
regardless
that, right?
of what the census says, there's still an unaccounted for percentage that has never been included. And we were at 104,000 estimate in 2019.
Okay, so we know that we have, That's a very small community.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very small community.
Expensive community, though.
To have a $300 million conversation for a small community like this, I don't think it's realistic. So we have to come up with better ideas.
The $300 million has to do with what we owe. Because
because the
legislature abused the government employees retirement system in so many instances for political purposes, didn't fund it, and now they're like,
you can't blame the legislature alone, because I've been doing a lot of research on this, and I am not here to defend what happened in the past, because I don't know what hand was dealt the
predated me.
However,
which means it predated you.
But there is a however. Be reminded
mm-hmm.
that when you look at the annuity payments,
mm-hmm.
I believe it's since 1994, we were not covering our annuity payments. So we were seeing it physically on our check stub saying, hey, you pay GRS.
Okay.
No, you didn't do that.
So what you're saying, it isn't just the legislature with the unfunded liabilities. There was an executive. There was a sponsorship. There was sponsorship negligence and malfeasance as well.
Absolutely.
That's because of
our financial challenges. Mm-hmm. So perhaps what we've done, what we did in the past is, we really didn't pass balanced budgets, or our revenues
correct.
Did not support
correct.
Our correct. Budget correct. Projections, correct. And we did not move to revisit our budgets. I actually moved legislation to require the legislature to revisit their budgets on a 6-month basis mm-hmm. to determine whether or not our revenues are aligning with what we've passed,
mm-hmm.
because we see what happens when your budget don't align with your revenues.
So there shouldn't just be a revenue estimating conference. There needs to be a revenue alignment review.
Estimating You got a line. You have to. We want to see
revenue alignment review. I like that.
Well, what it is we got to move away from estimating. We could estimate. Yes, you estimate for the year ahead.
Well, estimate is good, but we want to see internal review
for the year that we're in.
Internal annual review is good.
Absolutely.
Estimate is not a problem.
That's part of, and I don't want us to sway away from what we're talking about as far as GRS.
No, because that's...
But there's a lot of components. We had the situation with the early retirement. I don't know if you were in the legislature at that time.
Yes.
That also compounded the issues.
That was 2011.
I had employees at the time
Act
who were...
7261, I believe.
49, 50 years old and... Yeah. They were gone.
Yeah, 29.0123.
So there's a lot of things that occurred. But this is how I feel. If we don't address this in the 34th legislature, because a lot of time has passed, and we continue to talk about it, and we haven't really seen any hard, change or recommendations or adjustments, if you will, we have to really, really, really hunker down on this in the 34. This is like a hurricane. We got put on some clips.
Madam President, I love this conversation, but sometimes I got to protect you from yourself. All right, you got a meeting at 10, and the conversation is so dope. You know what I'm saying? I'm loving it, but I got to protect you from yourself.
My staff love me.
So I know.
They had texted me.
So check this out. Tell your chief of staff or Jamila to reach out to Zoe Zimmet here, and we could have part two. This is part one. Okay.
But
we
I enjoy
part
two. Talking to you.
No, it's awesome. And not only that, in person, there's a different feel than over the phone.
Yes.
So we got to get you back here as well. So what we'll do is we'll work on part two of this very important conversation because we haven't touched healthcare like we want to, education, infrastructure. There's so many different things. The marine industry, we touched on it a little bit with the commissioner, but there's so many areas that we want to touch on. Education in particular, I know we need to have a long discussion about because infrastructurally and curriculum-wise, there are things that I'm sure you want to talk about.
Oh boy.
So, but you got an important meeting, and you can also talk about that meeting generically in part two. Okay?
Absolutely.
Good. So tell the staff, you don't blame me, just because, your boss is good at breaking things down. I'm still trying to protect her because she got an obligation and we don't want to undermine it.
I just have to say this. I have a young lady in my office. She's like 26.
Mm-hmm.
She's a real bulldog. She texts me twice. You
got to
go.
You got to go. So, got to go. You got to go.
I love my millennials.
Yeah, I know.
They keep it real.
Thanks a lot for joining us here on Anniversary Week and we'll get you back in, I'd say within the next 10 to 2 weeks. 10 days
right,
to 2 weeks.
Sounds
okay?
Good.
We're working on it. Thanks a lot, Madam President.
Thank you.
You got it. The notorious DFG, ladies and gentlemen, making an appearance here on Anniversary Week. She didn't have to do it. What you call it, she said, I got ducky during this weekend, so we're glad to have her and a great conversation. We spoke of tourism a little bit, and you heard the passion from her with respect to administrative responsibilities. And speaking of truth, really, when you break it down, just leveling with the people of the Virgin Islands. We're going to take a selfie here. Get me involved in this selfie because, she's a selfie pro. Let me do the peace sign. We're good. We're actually doing a selfie live. Yeah. We're good to go. And good. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Madam President. Don't forget your bag. And not come silly at that meeting. I'm not going to tell the public, who the meeting's with, but you can do what you got to do. And your staff waiting for you and all that stuff. That was Donna Fred Gregory. Got about 6 or 7 minutes left on the show. And she touched on some serious areas. And don't forget, right, the thing that she did, by the way, to get from here to where the meeting is only 5 minutes, so she's going to be okay. The three areas, right? Healthcare, the government employees retirement system, and energy. Those are the three subcommittees. Healthcare, Senator Novell Francis. He's a four-term veteran. Government employees retirement system, another four-term veteran, Senator Kurt Vialli. And the infrastructure and energy, a three-term veteran, Senator Janelle Saro. So they're in good hands. They're in good hands. But in good hands is a part of it. We want to see the deliverables. And hopefully those subcommittees could deliver something. But we need cash. The government employees retirement system needs a significant infusion of cash on a one-time basis, $3 billion over 20 years, $300 million per, which is $6 billion. Okay? And just to give you an idea, right, are the retirees right now, right, the obligation to the government employees retirement system is $22 million a month. Okay? You multiply 22 million times 12. That's $264 million. Okay? 22 times 10 is 220. And then another 22. 242. And another 22. Get you to 264. Okay? Broke that down for you. All right? The active members and the government contribution is 46 and $92 million respectively. Right? The aggregate there, that's another $138 million. Right? 46 plus 92, 138. You subtract the 138 from the 264. And that's your annual structural shortfall. That's $126 million. So that's the negative net differential that the system is dealing with on an annual basis. And we keep tapping in, drawing down on the investment revenues that are being generated. And it's unfortunate. You know, while we're doing good locally here, right, is what we're losing out on is, had we had our investments, right, where we weren't drawing down off of it to meet our local obligations, we'll be generating significant revenues right now, because the market, right, is up 16% since Joe Biden and Kamala Harris took office back on January 20th. 16%, just to put that in perspective, right? If our investment portfolio was worth $1 billion on January 20th, today, we would have earned another $160 million on top of that. That would have covered our structural annual deficit for the government employees retirement system. But because we keep drawing down, that's how we hurt. You know, I'm talking a little technically here, but sometimes you people, are you like that? You know, we ain't backing down from that. You know, we got intelligent audience. We gonna break things down. I'm gonna throw the numbers out there, and I'm sure you're gonna appreciate it, right? So we really need to do what we could do, right? Because the marketplace isn't going to be this way forever. You know, we know that, right? And the system is owed a significant infusion of cash. Unfunded liabilities and, as the Senate President said, and she's correct, the executive branch not necessarily doing what they were supposed to do. You know, and paying their fee, their, like they're saying, St. Thomas, their fair share. Okay? So, these are the realities that we're dealing with, and you know, I'm going to be very candid with you. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. Is it salvageable? I think so. Will it take a lot of hard work and some good fortune? Yes. And we got to make that work, you know. But great show today, you know, without a doubt, you know. And of course, I'm glad that we linked up with Miss Aida Carter for that appearance on Friday between 8 and 9. Tomorrow, we got a good show. Coming on tomorrow as well. Looking forward to that discussion. And then, you know, we're going to do a little Kentucky Derby thing between 9 and 10 on Friday. Tomorrow, Rani and Rocky in the early hour again, okay? Because tonight we got State of the Union. It's like a quasi, you know, State of the Union address. Okay, kind of late. State of the Union will normally be like in late February, early March. But in this particular case, it is late April. And it makes sense, you know. Man been working, been busy. So the president's giving an address to the joint House and Senate. And looking forward to that as well. And Ronnie and Rocky and I are going to break that down in hour number one tomorrow. And then we got great guests coming up in hour number two. And of course, you know, I'm heading down the road now to get that second dose and go home or lay down. And I ain't fighting it. I just go home and chill. Thank you very much. Anniversary week continues here on Analyze This. Talk to you tomorrow. Be good. Be safe.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect that of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.